Ever wanted to get up close and personal with Blood Red? Well, here's your chance. Blood Red is heading back out on the road next Wednesday, the 24th of November, to Dublin, as Paul Gorst and Josh Williams from Analyzing Anfield bring you a special live episode ahead of the Reds' Champions League game with Porto. Tickets are available at bloodred.ie at €10 each. Do move quickly, though, as tickets are extremely limited. Follow the link in the description or head to bloodred.ie to join us out in Dublin at the Camden for Blood Red Live.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host Matt Addison with Paul Gorse, Joe Rimmer and Theo Squires alongside me. You'll have no doubt noticed there's no Guy Clark. Is it a coincidence after a heavy defeat for Arsenal over the weekend? Well, I'll let you decide. In his absence, I'll be overseeing a look back over the 4-0 victory over Arsenal, and we'll be taking a look at the upcoming Champions League tie with FC Porto to come on Wednesday night too. But Gorsty, we'll start with the Arsenal game, and I'll come to you first. It was a big win for Liverpool in terms of the scoreline, a big win in terms of keeping pace at the top of the Premier League as well. What did you make of the performance, the result, the game? Did it feel like a big one to you as well?
It did, actually, yeah. I wrote in my verdict that it was probably Liverpool's best performance at Anfield for ages, really. You think of this season and Brighton probably deserved the point. Chelsea were really good defensively. Manchester City, that can go either way, can't it? And then the rest have just kind of been what you'd expect Liverpool to do. Beat Crystal Palace quite comfortably, beat Burnley quite comfortably. But other than that, it's just been a little bit ordinary, shall we say, with the fans back in and not much to really get the fans going at times. And I think Klopp called for it himself in Friday's press conference. He said something along the lines of, this is Arsenal are coming to Anfield and we need to make sure that means something. And he always tries to call for a little fan response. And for half an hour, didn't really get it, did we? Until Arteta went head-to-head with Klopp on the sidelines, which was a bit foolish to do on several levels. And then next thing we know, Liverpool have pulled the finger out and the fans are up and Liverpool are on the front foot. And after that, you never really felt like it was going to go any other way than a Liverpool win. I thought second half, they were superb, really pressed high up the pitch, forced Arsenal into so many mistakes in that final third, won the ball back in the rather penalty area, and they were well deserving of the 4-0 win in the end. And I think Guy said to me on Friday's pod that is it time for a bit of a statement performance, and I think I said, yeah, it is, to be fair, and that was exactly what it was. So, I'm struggling to think of the last time Liverpool played that well in the Premier League at Anfield. Certainly going back to probably when they were just about to become champions, and that's, 18 months, nearly 2 years ago now. So really was a superb performance, particularly second half. And once Arteta was getting called a blue nose, this, that and the other for trying to kick off with Klopp, that was when the game turned, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. I'll stay clear of asking you where Liverpool might be without Mohamed Salah, but Mikel Arteta was riled by the Anfield crowd, or rather, vice versa, the Anfield crowd riled by Mikel Arteta. And as Gorsty said, it kind of felt like the game kind of turned on that moment. It probably will feel in hindsight like a bit of a mistake from the Arsenal boss.
It certainly did. And I think it's not so much a mistake from Arteta, but I think Klopp is the absolute master at taking moments like that and making sure that Liverpool feed off it. And you saw him immediately after that happened, turn into the crowd behind them and gearing them up and saying, come on, use this. And Anfield responded. And, you felt like Anfield responded. You felt like the players had got like a lit a fire into them a little bit, like Arsenal sort of annoyed them a little bit. And, I think it was a really difficult opening sort of 40 minutes or so. I think Arsenal, what I sort of discovered about Arsenal is that they basically have decided to stop playing football to get some results. And, fair play to them. They sat in and they made it really difficult for Liverpool. I thought defensively they were really well set up and stifled Liverpool. I actually don't think Liverpool played well at all in the opening 40 minutes or so. And that was because I think Arsenal just shut every avenue for them, pressured them well and didn't let them play through them. And then when they got the ball back, they didn't really offer a lot of Arsenal, but they knew how to stop Liverpool. So, up until that moment, everyone sort of lost their heads. And I think Liverpool just took advantage of that 5 minute spell where, you know, Arsenal really wants to get in for half time and sort of settle back down. And Liverpool, you know, I turned to him and said, look, you know, I think if Liverpool score now, be the perfect time, because Arsenal have to come out in the second half, and you know they can't continue to play this way. And you know, fair play to Mane, scores these good goals, doesn't he? You know, really good header, escaping from that free kick and getting his head on the ball. It was great. You know, I'm really gutted, guys, not here now. But yeah, I mean, any win over Arsenal, I think, is really good, because they're a funny side, aren't they? Because they still feel like you're playing a big team, and Liverpool batter them every season, and it still feels like more of a result than it would do if you were playing any normal non-league. They are practically non-league. I was going to say mid-table. Yeah. Mid-table team. To me, Arsenal are just a very sort of poor mid-table team now. They're not, you know, upper mid-table team. You should beat them every year, but it always feels like you're beating a really good side. And, you know, Liverpool went out and did that in really good fashion. So, yeah, I don't think it was a mistake from Arteta as much as it was a masterclass of Klopp from taking a moment and turning it to Liverpool's advantage.
Yeah, it was a 10-game unbeaten run, I think, heading into this one, Theo, in all competitions. It does kind of feel a little bit like, to me, Liverpool just put Arsenal in their place a little bit, really. As Joe said, they're obviously a little bit way down the table. And I sort of feel like this game kind of showed that. You've got three sides at the top of the Premier League, and when they're anywhere near their best, they are considerably better than all of the rest of the sides in this division.
Very much so. I think for most of the first half, there was an anxiety about Liverpool, an anxiety about Anfield. And that would have been an international break hangover, a hangover from the West Ham result and all the injuries. You're thinking that fear in the back of your head, is it going to be a repeat of last season? We've got the players, we've got the talent, but you lose so many of them to injuries and you just can't do it. You can't turn it on. You can't get it over the line. But then that big instance happened. Liverpool got the opening goal from Sadio Mane, and it gave them that belief back. It gave them the crowd back, the confidence, and they just kicked on from there. And we were talking before the game with the injuries that it can't be an excuse, but Arsenal would have overtaken Liverpool with a victory then. That just seems inconceivable when you think only a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, Arsenal were right at the bottom of the table and Liverpool were right at the top. So for them to have turned it around to be that close to each other, still can't get your head around it. But then Liverpool are one of these special sides in the division, along with Chelsea, along with Man City. And the fact that they've done this to Arsenal, who, as Joe said, they're still a big team in the division. They've still got some big players. They're just in transition, like Liverpool would have been under what Brendan Rodgers around that era.
They've been in transition for the last 10 years.
Liverpool were in transition for what, five, six years. The only reason they weren't was because they got Jurgen Klopp in. If Arsenal had got a decent manager as opposed to Arteta, they might have got out of that slump as well. I'm sure United will be in the same boat now. But yeah, Liverpool got it right and they made this big statement against Arsenal. It's what they needed to do. Like when Chelsea got that victory, it was against Leicester. It was a statement for them. And you can't let a big gap go open up. We were saying in the press box before the game, I think it would have been, 7 points if Liverpool had lost to Arsenal. And you'd be saying, well, that's the title done. Chelsea looked too good to let that slip now. But yeah, they'll have one odd bad game here or there against West Ham or drop points against Brighton. But they're still talented. And it was big performances from players that needed them. Like Oxlade-Chamberlain and Thiago were superb. And when you have all these injuries in midfield, those are the two you were looking to. They needed to step up. And when it counted most, it showed they can still stake their claim in this team. And that's what Liverpool needed, and gives you that bit of faith going into this festive period. You know, the team's going to look a bit different against Porto, but if they can do that against Arsenal, it wipes away any doubts that were created from the West Ham match and that we've all been pondering over for the past 2-3 weeks, and gives you full confidence going into the next run of games.
Can I just dive in? So, you know, everyone's talking about it being a statement, and on one hand, as I was saying before, because Arsenal still feel like a big club, it does feel like a statement. And I definitely think it was a performance Liverpool needed in terms of what Theo's just talked about there, you know, some big performances that were just timely for them. But, you know, beating Arsenal shouldn't really be a statement, should it? You know, like, to borrow a phrase from an old UFC fighter, beating Arsenal by a few goals is like saying I got a toy in my Happy Meal. It's, you know, everyone should do it, shouldn't they, really? Man City just did it the other month. So, you know, I don't think it is like a massive, massive statement, because Liverpool do it every season. But I do think it was needed. And hopefully other teams take note, even if I think Arsenal should get a few beatings, because they're Arsenal. Guy, Clark, they're Arsenal.
Yeah, strong message for Arsenal and for guy there from Joe Gorsty. I think the midfield that I wanted to pick up on, because I think Fabinho was exceptional. Thiago looked good as well. I'm not quite as convinced on Oxlade-Chamberlain as what Theo was, but I think it had to be the area of the pitch where Liverpool improved and looked strong. And you know, to be fair to them, they didn't have much option but to play those three, and they did play okay as a trio.
Yeah, I don't know this for a fact, but I imagine it was the first time those three have ever started as a midfield three. I thought the tackle from Fabinho in the first half, I don't know whether it was 1-0 or 0-0 at the time, but you know, Anfield celebrated that like a goal, stopped the 2-on-1 counter-attack, and Fabinho for me now is just as important as Van Dijk and Alisson to that defensive structure. He's just a world-class holder midfielder, isn't he? Liverpool's most important and influential midfielder, one of the first names on the team sheet, as I say, alongside those two and probably Salah and Trent. So he was excellent. And Thiago, I think, you know, if he gets time and space like he did at times against Arsenal, he's always going to look good, isn't he? He picks his passes so precisely and very rarely chooses the wrong option. I think Virgil van Dijk was telling him to kind of speed up at times in the first half. He was just dwelling on it a little bit at times when it was 0-0 and Liverpool needed to move it a bit faster to move Arsenal about. But his first start for 8 weeks, and I hope for him now is he can avoid any more little vague niggles and knocks that seem to sideline him for longer than should be necessary, and he can get a little run in the team. And then Jordan Henderson, of course, was fit enough to play 15-20 minutes as well, wasn't he? So what was an area of huge concern on Friday in this pod is now looking a lot better than it did. Tyler Morton obviously getting his Premier League debut, what a moment for him. And, you know, slowly but surely, we should be getting the likes of James Milner and Naby Keita back. And Curtis Jones even tweeted the little hourglass emoji yesterday, which could be quite cryptic. You know, will he be okay for the next couple of games? We'll find out. But, yeah, it's not quite from feast to famine, but the midfield options are looking certainly not as worrying as they were a few days ago. And I did think Oxlade-Chamberlain was very good in the second half.
There's a few decent performances as well, Theo, in terms of the front line. Obviously, goals all round for them. Minamino coming off the bench with his first touch, finding the back of the net as well. But I wanted to sort of touch on Diogo Jota. It kind of felt like a bit of a typical performance of late from him. Didn't do a great deal in the first half, didn't see a huge amount of the ball. But then in the second half, scores a goal. And that's all you can ask, really, isn't it, for a number nine?
Yeah, and it was an exceptional goal as well. It's one that will get you off your seats when he puts the defender on his backside and then the goalkeeper. It's something you're used to seeing Mohamed Salah do. And it's what you want to see from Jota more consistently. We know he's got the talent, but he has got these moments in games where he'll be a bit quiet. He doesn't link up with the other two as well as Firmino would. But then he gets the big goals when it matters and he makes the impact. I suppose that's what the next step is for him, to be able to do it more consistently. Because when you're looking at the age of this front three, while they might want to give Salah a long-term contract and have him very much as part of Liverpool's future, you still don't know what it means for Firmino and Mane long-term. And you think Jota will be one of the first choice in this team for the next few years going forward as he matures, when he makes that step up. But the signs are good. And with Firmino injured, you need him to be getting goals. It was a scare when he went into that big blow with Ramsdale. They were both down for a long time. The stretcher was prepared. It was a big relief to see him get back to his feet. I know Klopp said in the post-match that it was a doubt with his knee injury. We don't know if he's going to be okay for Porto or Southampton at the weekend. But Liverpool definitely need him to be able to get over that and be fit, because he is going to be important for them, not just whilst Firmino's out, but in January when Salah and Mane go to the Africa Cup of Nations. And beyond that, because he has proven that for so long it looked unthinkable to break up Liverpool's front three. But in his 18 months at the club, he has done just that. It is no longer those three are always starting. You can't pick it. It's Salah and two others. And they've also made sure that it is a difficult decision for Jurgen Klopp. But you also got to give praise to Origi and Minamino. Minamino came on and he did what you needed him to do. He got an important goal, more for him than for the result at that time. And we've seen Origi get goals this season against West Ham when they come on. They're making an impact much more than they did last season. And they're going to be needed in the weeks ahead as well. It's quite nice to be having one of these podcasts when we're talking about all four strikers scoring goals in a game. But that's been the case all season. It's almost gone under the radar a bit. It's not just the case of Salah's goals carrying Liverpool through games. I think Mane is the second leading goal scorer in the Premier League now. Firmino has scored a decent amount, more than we've seen recently in other seasons. The only reason he's not got more is because he hasn't played as consistently because of the hamstring injury and that. Jota's still got a decent return to his name. And Origi and Minamino, they've been given, fed barely any minutes and they're still getting goals. It's certainly a blessing for Jurgen Klopp at a time when you're going to be doubting players because of they're not as A-list as the other names or because of the injuries or because of the Cup of Nations. Liverpool's still got so many attacking threats. They might not be as exciting as others, but they are doing the job.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think another big blessing, Joe, will be at left back, the performance of Kostas Tsimikas, who was obviously in place of Andy Robertson. And it was probably his biggest test, I think, this season in terms of the quality of opponent coming up against Bukayo Saka, but he didn't really put a foot wrong, did he?
He didn't, no. I thought, again, another really, really encouraging performance from him. You know, it's one of them. I think that if someone said to me Liverpool are playing in a Champions League final tomorrow, I'd probably still go for Robertson, but Tsimikas is pushing him all the way, isn't he? I mean, I really like the way he goes forward. I think he's a slightly different attacker to Robertson in the sense that he seems to come inside a little bit more, gets the byline, he floats crosses rather than sort of whips them. And it just gives Liverpool a little bit of a different dimension from the left that Trent does from the right. So, yeah, I really like him. I think it was Andrew Beasley who tweeted a really good stat about him. And I think in the Premier League, they've not conceded with him in the team or when he started. And I think they've won like every game as well.
I think that's right. I think they've scored 18 and conceded none, I think.
Yeah. You're
right.
Yeah. It's incredible, really, if you think about it, isn't it? So I think it's one of them, you know, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, and maybe we're already at this stage, you know, when both are fully fit, Klopp's got a big decision to make. And like I say, you know, I think if Liverpool were playing in a massive, massive game tomorrow, you know, if they were playing Man City this week, for example, you'd probably want Robertson in. But Tsimikas is pushing him closer and closer to that not being a complete sure thing, is he? So fair play to him. It's a really, really good, he's had a really, really good season. And I think I've said before, I think Liverpool played it perfectly with him because Klopp could have been tempted to throw him in last season. He didn't. He kept him on the sidelines. He made him wait. He made him adjust. And he looks like he's managed it perfectly again because he looks like the perfect understudy, doesn't he? And perhaps more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one of plenty of positives for Liverpool over the weekend. We'll move on to Porto very shortly. But before we do that, I did want a quick word on Manchester United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Gusty, I'll come to you on this one first. It seems to have fallen apart pretty quickly, obviously, that 5-0 loss to Liverpool. There's been Manchester City and now Watford since then as well. Are you surprised it took them this long to come to their senses? And are you at all worried that it could help them get back to where they want to be?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised in the fact that they've just had 2 weeks there to sort it out and then lose to Watford and the house comes tumbling down. So it makes me think that they must have thought that Solskjaer long-term was the right man for the job. The fact that they've let Antonio Conte and Mauricio Pochettino and whoever else slip through the fingers whilst Solskjaer's been the manager. But then you lose to Watford and then all of a sudden it's, oh no, well, he can't be the right man, then we've got to let him go. They just, I don't know, it just seems to be typical Manchester United. And the fact that he gave a kind of leaving interview, didn't he, yesterday, it just seems that this is a club who are not serious. They're not bothered if they win or lose because they know that the size of the club and the wealth that's always going to come through the coffers means that they're insulated from proper failure, really. They're always going to be in the Champions League and they're always going to be getting the money from that and they're always going to be able to attract big names because they're Manchester United and they're always going to be able to get the social media numbers that they want based on the fact that they can kind of sell that to the incredible fan base that they've got. Doesn't really seem to be too much of an emphasis on what to do on the pitch, which probably explains why Solskjaer was able to last as long as he did. There was no structure to that team, no coaching, and if you watch them against Liverpool or City or you know, whoever over the last few weeks, I mean, it's been coming, hasn't it, in terms of the run of results that they're on. Even when they were winning games, it was kind of like the scraping by, the winning penalties, the relying on a bit of magic from one of the many talented stars that they've got. There was never any really coherent game plan, and now all the kind of chickens have come home to roost at one time. So it's been coming, hasn't it? I'm just maybe a little bit surprised that it's come after the Watford game and it wasn't 2 weeks ago when they've had time and energy to sit back, rethink, and have a little bit of a mull over who can be available, because now it just seems like there's a little bit of a desperation and they're going to be, maybe they might not get this one right because they've got games coming up, you know, big game against Villarreal in the Champions League, and then they play Chelsea at the weekend. So they're in a world of hurt at the moment, and we shall see what's next for them. But maybe more of the same with Michael Carrick on board as the interim's interim, and then see what happens at the end of the season. It's just strange. They don't have serious football people running that football club at the highest level.
Yeah, very, very strange, isn't it? The sort of timing of it. I think Maurizio Pochettino, from what I've read, appears to be the most likely one to go there next, Theo. But to me, as Gorsty says it just doesn't feel like a case of plugging in a better manager and it all gets perfect and all sort of fixes itself. I mean, obviously, that's a good start, but it feels like there's bigger issues at play here.
Yeah, they've basically just made the exact same mistake they did when they gave it Solskjaer in the first place. I've heard that some of the problems that the players had with Solskjaer was the coaching, that it wasn't professional enough, they weren't improving as players, and there wasn't enough experience in the coaching backroom staff, and that the Glazers and Edward Wood did offer him, we can improve your staff, we can get more experience in, and he turned down that request. So what are they doing? They're just taking off the man at the top and kept the exact same backroom staff there and pushed Carrick up a position. So you're hoping you get an immediate bounce, I suppose, against Villarreal. And that's a crucial game for them, because if they lose that, they could be looking at Champions League group stage exit. Atalanta could easily overtake them, and then they're down in third looking at Europa League football. So I suppose that would be part of thinking with the timing now. They're looking at the possibility of missing out on the Champions League millions. But then, well, you're going to lose to Chelsea no matter who's in charge. They could get Zidane, and it looks like it won't be him at the moment, and they're not going to get an instant return against Chelsea, you wouldn't imagine, because they're just not a very good team. The timing of it, like Gorsty said, they've had the international break and they didn't want to do it. We've seen Norwich and Villa get new managers in the international break, and they've had that plan. They know what they want to do. But then why do you have an interim and then a caretaker, or a caretaker then an interim? It doesn't make any sense. Like, you make a decision to get your manager, or get rid of your manager, because you've got someone in place that you want to replace them with. When Liverpool got rid of Rodgers, it was a shock. If they'd done it in the summer or anything, it wouldn't have been as much of a surprise. But when they did it, it was a shock. And then within 4 days, Jurgen Klopp was manager. And they've had that plan, and we've seen how that's worked for them. Whereas what have United done? Oh, we don't know who can replace Solskjaer, same as we didn't know who could replace Mourinho. We'll just stick a legend in there, hope he can put some crackers over the walls for a little bit, get us back into it, get us in the Champions League knockout stages, and then go again in the summer. So there's nothing to worry about at Old Trafford at the moment if you're a rival team. Because if Carrick's doing a job, then maybe he'll get the interim job permanently. But then by making him caretaker before an interim, that just means they don't trust him. They don't think he's good enough to do it. They've got the same issues about the backroom staff. And then with an interim, well, you're not trusting them to do a good job. And then you're backing yourself into a corner, because if your interim does a good job, but you're wanting Pochettino in the summer, what does that do then? Are you going to have to just let them go and risk any backlash there, like they did with Solskjaer in the first place when they felt bullied into giving him the job permanently? It's just a mess of a club, making bizarre decision after bizarre decision. When you've got Norwich City, who are getting their decisions right, and they've got them the best manager they can do to stand any chance of staying up, and they've had that plan for getting Daniel Farke out the door after they got their first win as well. And this is a newly promoted team. And Manchester United, one of the biggest names in England, have been making these same mistakes again and again and again. They're nothing to worry about whilst this current leadership's in charge there.
Theo mentions Brendan Rodgers there, Joe. He's one of those that has been put forward as a possible candidate. Would he be a good fit for them, do you think? Would it be a good move? And would you care at all if he did go there?
In terms of caring, no, I probably wouldn't care, really. But I can't work out whether he'd be a good fit. On one hand, I think he'd come in with far more, you know, football pedigree than Solskjaer ever had. And I think, you know, if he didn't have Liverpool on his CV, you'd look at him and go, you know, he's a really good young manager that's in the Premier League. But the Liverpool part of it feels like he just failed at some of the big decisions and the big moments at Liverpool, which really mattered, you know, whether it was replacing big players or managing big players. There were times when he just left a little to be desired, and whether he's learned from that, you know, we won't know until he takes a job like United. So it's a difficult one to work out. But, you know, United is it. I think many people might sit here and say, well, why are you talking about United on a Liverpool podcast? But I think with Liverpool and United, they're always sort of, it feels like there's so many parallels to be drawn between the two clubs. And the one thing I could never understand about Solskjaer was, like, it felt to me a lot like Kenny at Liverpool. And, you know, I felt very sorry for Kenny when he was sacked. You know, he led Liverpool to two finals. There were some great moments in that season and some really poor ones as well. And, you know, let's face it, Liverpool were a bar width away from scoring another 15 goals that year. You know, they seemed to hit the bar so many times and he was slightly unlucky. But when Kenny came in, they picked up from Hodgson and like Solskjaer and Mourinho, he put the owners in a situation where they kind of had to give him the job. And I think Solskjaer did the same. But what FSG did and what United have failed to do is then a year down the line, they clearly thought, we never really saw Kenny as a long-term manager. We've got to make a ruthless decision. And they did that. And United just don't, whatever it is with them, they just don't seem to be able to make the ruthless decisions that I think set apart owners, you know, the Abramovich's, the City's owners, Liverpool's. And, you know, it's just been a succession of bad decisions. And then you look at the summer and they throw all this money at him, you know, with Solskjaer again, after a season in which really there was a lot of cracks papered over. And the signings just didn't make sense. Why were they signing Ronaldo after spending 90 million on Sancho? It just didn't make sense. And, you know, like Theo said, I don't know whether anyone should be worried about what's going on at United in terms of them getting better, because I just think they're a bit of a circus at the moment. So Rodgers, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't even know whether he should take it, because I think he's probably onto a better thing with Leicester. Albeit, you know, United are a far, far bigger club, but they're so badly run. So difficult. I wouldn't care so much. I'd be quite intrigued to see how he'd do, actually, see whether he can answer any of those questions that I've just asked. But I don't think Rodgers is ever... I don't think Liverpool fans hold a special place in their heart for him. And I'd go as far as saying I don't think he holds Liverpool in his heart either. So I think Liverpool fans would accept it. And I think he'd probably quite happily go there.
Yeah, I certainly think it'd be an interesting move, an interesting one to see sort of how it went. But we'll move back to matters involving Liverpool directly. Gorse, the FC Porto to come next. Liverpool already through to the Champions League last 16 as group winners. And I suppose we could see a few more young players in this one. Expect Jurgen Klopp to make a few changes at the very least. But do you rest everyone for this one? Or are there maybe one or two senior players that you think maybe need a few minutes? What are we thinking? Wholesale changes or maybe still have one or two of those seniors in there?
I think we might see Tyler Morton, might me. Possibly Kate Gordon. Maybe Connor Bradley. But I'd be mindful of giving Jordan Henderson a start. I think he could probably use the minutes. Ibu Konate hasn't played too much, has he? He's in line for a start, you'd imagine. Maybe alongside Nat Phillips, but if not, probably Van Dijk. We'll come on to team selection, I'd imagine, won't we? But generally, yeah, I don't think it's going to be... I've seen loads of people saying, you know, the whole joke of bring your boots and Klopp's going to play, you know, Caroline and Carol from the canteen up front and whatever else. But I don't think it's going to be that type of team. There's still 2.5 million at stake in terms of what a win in the Champions League means for prize money. So I think it's going to be a nice blend. Imagine Minamino will play, only, and we're not too sure of Origi's status at the moment, but I certainly don't think it's going to be something like we've seen at Michelin last season when, you know, Billy Cometio was playing and Leighton Clarkson started in that one, did he? That really was one of the youngest teams, but I think it might be a nice little blend. And at home against Porto, you think that it might be a good time to do it. You know, team strong enough to get the win against a team who they beat 5-0 a few weeks ago. Was it 5-1? I don't remember now. But still a team that is going to, you know, give enough of a rest to the likes of Salah and Mane and probably Jota, because there's no Firmino at the moment. So, yeah, I think we might see a nice little blend tomorrow night, or Wednesday night even.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's interesting you mentioned the Michelin game. I was going to bring that up because I think that's the one in which Diogo Jota played because he needed the rhythm, needed the minutes, but then picked up the injury and I think was missing for 3 months off the back of that. Yeah. But I suppose you can't really go into it thinking that, can you, Theo? You've got to sort of pick these players and just play them and not really overthink it. You've just got to put the team out there and whoever plays and just fingers crossed Liverpool don't get any more injuries.
It is an awkward one for them because they've also got the UEFA Youth League and I think they're second in that group. So you're going to have some of their younger players that they'll want to play in that so they can still get through in that competition as well. You're going to see, I suppose, the senior younger players who have been in the first team reckoning with the first team, like your Connor Bradleys, your Owen Becks, your Tyler Mortons, but some of them won't be. With Kate Gordon, he can't play. He's not on list A. He's not on list B. He's not been at the club long enough to be on list B. So as they didn't register him, he would have had to be on list A. So he can't play. So he'll be definitely in the youth league. And I think there's a couple of players like that. But it does mean it's going to be an interesting mix because when Liverpool have got all these injuries as well right through the club, it can't just be a case of playing all the kids. They're going to have to be some senior players they play. And then there's a lot of names you can put on the bench, but it means that when you're allowed to make five subs, Jurgen Klopp could very easily put five of his biggest names on the bench. And if it's not quite going well, just bring them on after an hour and turn it around. But then there are players there that need minutes. Like you could say Nat Phillips needs a game. Kanate needs a game. You talk about Minamino, Origi, if he's fit. There are options there. It's just what Jurgen Klopp wants to do. I think whatever we pick for our team selector, it would be a big ask to get it spot on because Jurgen Klopp always seems to pull a surprise anyway, never mind when it's a game like this. But there are players that you're not going to say to Mohamed Salah, do you want to sit this one out? He'll want to play if he's allowed to. Like we saw him having his mini hissy fit that he wasn't captain for that Michelin game last year. So we'll see what happens. But you'd expect it to be a nice blend of senior players and the ones wanting to stake a claim. There's not much they could do in midfield. It's just they can do what they've got because when you have got so many injuries, there isn't really that much room for Klopp to rotate as much as you'd expect.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one from a Porto perspective, Joe. Obviously, they need to win this. I think they're second in the group as it stands, a point ahead of third place Atletico Madrid. I suppose for them, they'll A, want to put in a much better performance than what they did in the first game because they weren't particularly good in that one. But B, they just need to win this one anyway. So the more changes from that perspective, the better from them.
It's an interesting one with Porto, wasn't it? Because remember when Liverpool played them a few weeks ago, they were on a 16 or 17 game unbeaten run, dating back to April, and looked like they were going to be a little bit of a force, and then Liverpool just completely hammered them out of sight on the night, didn't they, at the Drago? And I think their goalkeeper was a bit hapless on the night, but Liverpool were just so many levels above Porto on that night. That makes you think that's why we might see quite a bit of an eclectic mix of players on Wednesday night for Liverpool. They obviously, I mean, it doesn't matter whether they win, lose or draw from a qualification perspective, but, you know, every penny counts at the moment. So they'll be wanting to win it. They'll be wanting to continue on with the four straight wins that they've got at the moment. But in the back of the mind, they'll be knowing Southampton on Saturday is a bigger game for them ultimately this week. So I'm not too sure what to expect from Porto. Was that just an off night for them and they were in a really strong run of form that really showcased what they were about? I'm not too sure because you can't have an off night, but the way Liverpool just completely put them to bed, not really getting out of second gear, was just showed that Liverpool was so much stronger than them. So, it's going to be an interesting one. I just hope that there is a bit of intensity to it. You know, it doesn't ultimately matter, but be a shame if the Champions League group stage has just kind of drifted away from Liverpool because it's been good, hasn't it? Four wins, you know, some really good games in there, a couple against Atletico Madrid, first ever game against AC Milan outside of a Champions League final, and obviously the almost annual hammering of Porto. So I hope it doesn't just kind of fade away and Liverpool lose the next couple of games and finish the campaign on 12 points. although ultimately it doesn't matter, I guess.
Yeah, no, of course. And of course, they have sort of earned the right to have that as a possibility as well. So I suppose it makes sense now to move on to our teams for the game. It could be a little bit more interesting than it has been of late, to be honest. A few more options for Liverpool to pick from in this one. I think Alisson Becker will stay in goal. There is the option to rotate him out, Gorsty, but doesn't particularly need a rest. Are you going to go with him? And if you are, do you want to talk us through your back four as well?
Yeah, I don't see any reason to change him. I mean, you'd normally do it with a Carabao Cup, wouldn't you? But there's no real danger swapping him out. No worry of an injury or anything like that. So I'll keep him in goal at right back. I'm not sure. I don't know whether to leave Trent in or... Williams is okay, isn't he? No injury to Nico Williams.
He was injured at the weekend, I think, wasn't he? But nothing much, I don't think.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was one of the nine, wasn't he?
Yeah.
That's the issue. You know, Klopp would like to make changes, but he's got nine of his squad on the shelf, so it's going to be difficult to do. I think we may give Conor Bradley a start. Keep Tsimikas at left back, and then Konate and Matt Phillips.
Yeah, Alisson, Williams, Konate, Phillips and Tsimikas for me, Theo. Who do you reckon?
It should be easier if we had the press conference from Klopp, so we knew it was actually definitely ruled out. It depends all the way through the team, really, because if you think about it, if Jota's ruled out because of the knee injury or Origi's still ill, you might need Nico Williams in the front three. Or depending on what you want to do with your midfield, you might need Trent in midfield or something ridiculous like that. I'd probably go with what you've gone with. If we're going to assume Nico's okay and it was just a little knock that ruled him out, but then there's that chance that Trent might just have to play because Liverpool is very vague with these injuries. It's always back soon, just a bit too early. And then before you know it, they missed 2 months of the season. He did have a very good international break, Nico Williams, and there was no talk of him picking up injuries whilst he was away. He does deserve a chance if he's fit. I guess we'll find out tomorrow if he is or not. With Robertson, wouldn't want to risk him. Save him for Southampton. And Tsimikas deserves to keep the shirt. And the centre-backs, well, Joe Gomez is still out, so it makes sense to give Konate and Phillips the minutes there. We'll ask us again in 24 hours. We'll just do a random 5-minute podcast after Klopp's done his team news and we can do the team again.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, if it's not Nico, probably will be Trent, because I can't imagine that Conor Bradley would start, but you never know. In midfield, I'm going to go Morton, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Thiago, Gorsty. I think that's possibly an argument for Henderson, but I think Thiago is maybe in a bit more need of rhythm. So that's my kind of thinking. Are you going to go with that or change it up in the middle?
I think we might see Fabinho rested, Henderson to start, Thiago to start for the reasons you've just mentioned, and Tyler Morton. Obviously, he's very combative, isn't he? He likes to tackle, get stuck in. I thought he was excellent against Preston. Actually, he was the one holding down that midfield while Curtis Jones and Oxlade-Chamberlain went roaming around the pitch. Very disciplined performance against decent championship opposition. So, yeah, let's give Tyler Morton's big night at Anfield alongside the captain and Thiago.
Interesting. Theo, Tyler Morton for you as well, and if so, who are your two others?
Yeah, Tyler Morton deserves his start. Again, it's like Klopp said, Milner and Keita are the two closest to returning, but it's whether they're actually ready for midweek. Even then, probably when you can make five subs, it's just easier on the bench, throw them on for the final 15 minutes, as we saw with Henderson at the weekend. I'd like to think that it's maybe the number six you keep, that you have Henderson or Fabinho as the number six. And I know we've seen Morton do it in the League Cup games, but from what we've been told, he can play a bit more further forward. So to have him on the one side of the midfield and see what he can do there. And then it's between Thiago and Oxlade-Chamberlain. It's whether you want to risk Thiago picking up a needless injury like Jota did last year, but then Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. He's played a lot of football. Can't really split it between those two. I'll give you the clean sweep. I'll go for Thiago just because you two have. And then Henderson is the number six because he's the captain. You can have a young lad alongside him. help him through it a bit more. And then Fabinho's there on the bench if you need him.
Yeah, Tyler Morton certainly better, a little bit higher up the pitch, I think, for me. So it'd be interesting to see him tried out in that role for the first team. I think that's actually where he came on, isn't it, at the weekend. So, but yeah, a bit of a continuation from the Arsenal match. Up top, I'm going to grant Mohamed Salah his wish. I'm sure he'd probably want to play, get a couple of goals, Gorsty. But are you going to play him or save him?
The issue you've got is there's only four players for three positions, isn't there? So, you know, if he doesn't play, then you'd imagine Mane's going to play. Yeah, I'd imagine he'll probably be asking to play, won't he? You know, if Porto give up the kind of chances that they did in the first game, then Salah will be rubbing his hands at adding to his 16 goals this season. So imagine he wants to play every game, so give him another Champions League. He's also actually, he's around Steven Gerrard's record, isn't he, as the Pills all-time Champions League scorer. I don't know whether he's overtaken him at the moment, but, you know, with that many records coming and going with Salah, you can't remember them all, but he's certainly in that conversation. So maybe he'll want to start, as you say. And then let's give Minamino a go down the middle and play Mane on the left.
Interesting. I'm going Salah, Origi if he's fit, and Minamino. And it's interesting Theo mentioned Nico Williams. I'd be tempted to maybe put him up top, or not up top, but on the right-hand side, and take Salah off after an hour. Are you thinking along similar lines, Theo, or does Sadio Mane get a start for you as well?
I'm going to assume that Origi and Jota aren't going to make it. Just because, with Jota, I don't think they'd want to risk him because it was a heavy whack to his knee. He was down for a while. And with Origi, it was illness. And it's like, well, it depends how serious an illness it was. But there are options still there. I think Liverpool have got this nice thought in the back of their heads that they don't need to protect Salah and Mane as much because they've got the Africa Cup of Nations. Like, they can burn them out throughout December if they really want to, as long as they're fit enough to get Liverpool the job done. And if they're tired in January, well, doesn't bother them. It's Senegal's problem. It's Egypt's problem. So you might see them played a bit more than you'd expect. Like for that League Cup game against Leicester, for example, normally you'd expect them to drop out, but it's not in Liverpool's interest. You might as well start them in that. So it wouldn't be a surprise if they both kept the places for this one with that in mind. It just depends who else is available. If Nico Williams is fit, if he is a serious option to be in this front three in January, it's a good chance to see what he can do there, to give him that chance there. He did well when he went further forward against Preston. But if he's not, then you would be doing Salah, Mane and Minamino. It's just having that forward thinking. Is it an experiment you want to try Nico Williams in a front three ahead of January when you're losing them? But I'm looking at the B list now. The other attacking players you've got on there, Max Waltman, Oakley Cannoneer, Harvey Blair. It's not someone you really think they're ready to be starting a Champions League game for Liverpool just yet. So it won't be as much rotation as we'd expect.
Yeah, five substitutes as well. So if Salah and Mane do play, they can come off, of course, after an hour anyway. But those are our teams then, as ever. We'll finish with our usual match predictions again. Very, very hard to predict this one, given how poor Porto were in the first game and those teams that we've all picked. But I think I'll just go for a draw. I'll go for 1-1. I think Liverpool might score, but I think they might find it hard to win it, depending on how many changes they do make. Gorsty, I'll come to you first. Do you think Liverpool could win? Are you expecting Porto to get the result they need? It's a very hard one to predict.
It is, isn't it? Depends on the strength of the teams. You know, if Liverpool aren't through and they're playing a normal standard team that you'd imagine, then Liverpool win all day. But it really does just depend on that team. So I'll sit on the fence with you. I'll go with a 2-2 draw.
Theo, a draw for you as well? Or do you think they'll might be a winner on Wednesday?
I'm going for a Liverpool win. I think we've named enough senior players to get the job done. It's at Anfield. I mean, if you've got Salah in your team or you've got Mane in your team, you've still got your captain in there. You've still got your goalkeeper in there. Trent, it's a strong enough team to get the win. It might not be as A-list as we've seen in other Champions League games. It's whether I'm feeling confident enough for a clean sheet or not. And I'm going to say, because of the changes, not. So 2-1 Liverpool.
Interesting. Well, whatever happens, Liverpool are already safely through top of the group and into the last 16 draw. And that, I think, will do us for this edition of the podcast. Thanks to Paul Gorse, Joe Rimmer and Theo Squires for joining me and for you at home for watching and listening to. Plenty more content across the Echo, Liverpool.com and Blood Red to come over the next couple of days, including Jurgen Klopp's press conference and the footage from Liverpool's pre-Porto training session in Kirby. Until next time, though, it's goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.